If you can remember back a couple of weeks to the 38th chapter of the book of Genesis, then you'll remember that that chapter formed a break in the narrative concerning the life of Joseph. We step aside from the story of his sale by his brothers to the Midianite traders who took him down to Egypt and sold him to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh. And our focus in that chapter was upon Judah. And certainly there were things to learn about this this brother of Joseph and his response to the circumstances of his life. But we might ask the question, why? Why is the 38th chapter of Genesis there? Why isn't the 39th chapter the 38th chapter? Why do we have to consider the story of Judah at all? Well, one of the main reasons for considering this episode in Judah's life, apart from presenting us with a history for future generations, where did they come from, who was Perez, who was Zerah, who were these people, these ancestors of Jesus Christ, apart from that, this episode of chapter 38 marks a stark contrast with the story of Joseph. It's presented to us in that way. Joseph has been sold into slavery, sold by his own brothers, and taken hundreds of kilometers into Egypt, where he is again sold, traded in the slave market, and ends up in the employ, or ownership rather, of an Egyptian. And there he's set to work. And time passes, and Joseph shows faithfulness to his master. He demonstrates loyalty and good service. And more than this, everything he seems to do goes well. Now, let's remember that he's a slave, though. Let's not forget Joseph's circumstances here. He's owned by another man. He has no freedom to come and go. He is ordered about. He's told to do this task, and away he goes to do it, lest he be punished severely for his refusal. Yet, within those circumstances, what he does succeeds. Everything he puts his hands to turns out right. And his owner looks at this and observes this. And no doubt time is passing here, and it's over a period of time that Potiphar begins to realize that he's made a good investment in this guy. And increasingly then, he gives Joseph more and more responsibility. He's shown some faithfulness in the small things, and in those small things, he's done well. Everything's turned out right. Gives a little bit more, and in those things, everything goes well. And slowly, Potiphar realizes that he's got something of value here, and he uses it. He puts Joseph in charge of everything. Everything in the house and the field. In other words, Joseph is elevated to the position of a steward in the house of Potiphar. He keeps the books. He manages the staff. He oversees what goes on in the home and what goes on in the field. And as he does this, all that he does prospers. Why? Why is this the case? How is it that Joseph's circumstances are working out this way, so that within a relatively short period of time, probably considering the other things that happen in Joseph's life, that he gets elevated from slave to steward. Well, the chapter is very emphatic about the reason. Four times it states, the Lord was with Joseph. The Lord was with him, and the Lord caused all that he did to succeed in his hands. The Lord was with Joseph and showed him steadfast love. The Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord made it succeed. Over and over and over again, we see that the Lord was with Joseph. Now we see that the Lord was with Joseph, not only in the fact that all that Joseph did succeeded, but we also see it in the hints that we have with regard to the kind of man that Joseph was. Joseph was probably just a teenager, sold by his own brothers, sold into slavery. How would you have handled that? I can imagine thinking of all kinds of things that I would like to do to my brothers. I've imagined them for far less things than being sold into slavery. Can you imagine the bitterness of heart that could develop in a person that had experienced that? And yet you get no hint of that, do you, in this chapter? There's no sort of grudging obedience here. There's no hint of a desire to just get back at, well, who? God? For his circumstances? Oh, why had God done this to him? How could he be in this situation? Why should he respond in any way of favor to God, of obedience to God, of loyalty to God? See, God not only causes everything that Joseph does to succeed in the midst of his situation of slavery, but God has worked in Joseph's heart. Proverbs reminds us that it is out of the heart that spring the issues of life. The way that we respond to our circumstances is not circumstantial. It's a heart issue. You see, we can go through the worst kind of circumstances and we can become bitter and sorry for ourselves and all of that kind of thing. Or we can accept our circumstances, as tragic as they may be, and still have a bright outlook, which is what Joseph had. And we see it over and over again through the story of his life, which we'll be looking at in the coming weeks, until at the very end of this book, when his brothers in fear and trembling come to him because they've lost the protection of their father who has just died, come to Joseph and beg for him to forgive them for the terrible things he'd done. And Joseph says to them, in effect, I've never held this against you. I know that you meant it for evil, for harm, but God meant it for good. God has done me good, done you good, done the world good through all of this. And that seems to be the theme of Joseph's life, a trust in God in the midst of adverse circumstances, A refusal to become bitter, a refusal to blame others, rather a willingness to make the best of his circumstances for the glory of God. Why? Because God was with him. God was working in his heart to make him a happy person in adverse circumstances, and God was blessing Joseph's work. The Lord was with Joseph. But there's a second thing that comes out, I think, very clearly in this chapter. And that is that Joseph was not ashamed of the Lord. Joseph was not ashamed of the Lord. His master, we're told in verse 3, saw that the Lord was with Joseph, and that the Lord caused all that he did to succeed in his hands. Through his lifestyle, through the way that he worked, the way that he lived, the way that he conducted himself, there was evidently something going on in this man's life. Something that Potiphar could discern. He saw that the Lord was with him. Now, how would he know that the Lord was with him? Maybe he knew something of the Hebrews, but they weren't a nation at this time. Even though Potiphar's wife refers to him as a Hebrew, they were not a nation in the sense that they become 400 or so years later. This is basically just a family, just a clan. So what is it? How is it that this man Potiphar can discern that the Lord was with Joseph? Well, I think it must be because not only did Joseph live a particular way, but he witnessed a particular way. I believe that Joseph was vocal about his trust in God. I mean, he is later on, isn't he? Even in this passage. What does he say to this woman who tries to seduce him? I've been put in charge of everything that belongs to my master. The only thing that he has withheld from me is you. How can I do this great wickedness and sin against him? He doesn't say that, does he? It would have been a sin against Potiphar, given what Potiphar had entrusted him with, but he doesn't say that. He said, how can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? You see, God was such a part of his conversation that even talking to this woman, he comes into the conversation. God is so much the focus of Joseph's life that he cannot help himself talking about God. And even as it comes out here in his response to Potiphar's wife, it must underlie also what Potiphar knew about Joseph's God and what he saw reflected in Joseph's life. His master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord caused all that he did to succeed in his hands. Joseph was not afraid, was not ashamed of the Lord. And yet look at his circumstances. He's there in Egypt as a slave. He's a no one. You can't get any lower than that. And who's going to listen to a slave? Listen to a slave's opinions. Listen to a slave's beliefs. I mean, what's it done for him? And yet, Joseph's not ashamed of his circumstances. He acknowledges God. He acknowledges God's control so that even in the things that begin to succeed under his hands, Potiphar sees the control of God. and the blessing of God. But where has Joseph experienced the blessing of God? It must have looked pretty hopeless to Joseph. And, you know, I think I would probably have been inclined to keep my mouth pretty tightly shut with regard to a God that had allowed me to end up in such circumstances. I mean, who's going to want to trust in a God that lets his people end up as slaves in a foreign land? I mean, where's the power in a message like that? What's the point of telling people about a God like that? A God that will let his people suffer and allow awful things to happen to them as has happened to Joseph. But Joseph's not ashamed of the Lord. He's not ashamed of the circumstances that the Lord has brought him through. And you know the story. You know, in a sense, it would be lovely if we didn't know the story and we could read this chapter and we could be in suspense at what's going to happen next and so on. But, well, you know the outcome. At least most of you do here. So you know that he gets tempted and he refuses to yield to that temptation and he ends up suffering even more. I mean, he was a slave before, but at least he had some degree of work to do and a place to live. And indeed, as he succeeded, he would have been even more comfortably off than maybe some of the other servants, the Egyptian servants in Potiphar's house. And then suddenly he sunk from steward in the house of a captain of the guard of Pharaoh to a prisoner in the king's prison. From a slave, he does actually descend lower to an imprisoned slave. And yet, again, he is not ashamed of the Lord. The Lord was with him. The Lord showed him steadfast love. Now, I wonder how that looked. Have you ever thought about that? How did steadfast love of the Lord look to Joseph in prison in Egypt? We read the Psalms. Well, no, he couldn't. They weren't written yet. What did he have to cling on to in the worst of circumstances imaginable? I don't really know the answer to that, except that God was working in his heart. And he obviously had a deep sense of divine peace, even there under those circumstances. But the point that I'm trying to make is this. Joseph knew so much less than we do. So much less than we do. And yet, he knew God's presence and he knew God's encouragement, and he had no Bible chapter and verse that he could turn to, no psalm to sing, but he knew God. As a teenager, he knew God. After the horrendous experiences that he had gone through, he was still confident in God. And he doesn't denounce God. And he doesn't fight against God. And he doesn't curse God in that prison. He acknowledges God. And we see it because there in the prison, he finds favor in the sight of the guard, the keeper of the prison. So that over time, again, a similar thing happens as had happened in Potiphar's house. There he had been a slave and elevated to a steward. Here he is a prisoner and elevated to, well, a prisoner. But he's in charge of everything. The only thing he didn't have was the keys to get out. Because the Lord is with him. And Joseph is not ashamed of the Lord. He acknowledges God, and in his life and in his testimony, the guard sees a consistency that he is willing to trust this prisoner with the running of the prison. Isn't it an amazing story? The Lord was with Joseph, and Joseph was not ashamed of the Lord. How often we're ashamed of the Lord. How often we think, well, I can't really speak about God in this situation. I mean, people know about the troubles that are going on in my life. How can I tell people about God when there's this or that going on in my life, or I've just done this such a foolish thing? And I mean, my testimony is nothing. It's pointless. And we hold back. We think that people aren't going to hear us because our circumstances seem to weaken what we have to say about the love of God, the faithfulness of God, the power of God. And who would want to trust a God when his servant's life is in such a mess? But Joseph was never afraid. He didn't see his circumstances as any excuse for not telling other people about his God. Now, the third thing that is very clear in this chapter: the Lord was with Joseph. Joseph was not ashamed of the Lord. But God's presence and Joseph's loyalty led to persecution rather than exempting him from trouble. God's presence with Joseph and Joseph's loyalty to God led to persecution rather than exempting him from trouble. He was in Egypt in the first place because of the envy and jealousy of his brothers, who saw in his life the blessing of God, the favor of God. And they didn't like it. They were jealous of him. They sold him. And that loyalty to God wasn't a protection to Joseph from the wiles of a wicked woman who, day after day after day after day, that's the emphasis in the Hebrew, ongoing, unrelenting temptation. She came to him, spoke to him, boldly called to him, "Lie with me, lie with me, lie with me." And he would not listen to her. It wasn't just a one-off experience. "Oh, good, I conquered that. That's out of the way. Let's get on with life." No, it went on, and it went on, and it went on, and it tested him over and over and over again. He was a slave. He couldn't go home anytime he wanted to. Couldn't go back to his father. He was a prisoner. Couldn't get out of that prison. Locked in. For years he was there. Even friends he made there let him down, as we will see later on. And so day after day after day, he's incarcerated there. with all the frustrations that must have meant to him and the temptations there to doubt God and his favour and his love and his kindness and his power. And what of those dreams that he had dreamed, those messages from God? Had it all come to nothing? Was his elevation in the house of Potiphar just a partial fulfillment of that, but it didn't quite get to the end of the story and everything's come crashing down? But Joseph never loses his faith in God. He remains loyal to God. And again, let's remember this. Let's remember this. He had not the Bible. He didn't have it. This word of God that tells us if you will be my disciples, you must forsake father and mother, brother and sister. You must take up a cross of suffering, and follow me. A servant isn't greater than his master. They persecuted me, they will persecute you. Joseph didn't have that. He didn't have the warnings that we have and the encouragement that we have. Blessed is it when people despitefully use you for righteousness' sake. He didn't have that. And how quick we are when things start getting a little rocky. How quick we are to question God's love. How soon we are to doubt his care. Joseph had so much less reason to have confidence in God than we do. And it really puts us to shame, doesn't it? Because God has warned us that his presence with us and our loyalty to him will lead to persecution and will not exempt us from trouble. We ought to expect it. You've heard me say over and over again from this pulpit that if our lives are free of persecution, of trouble for any length of time, we need to question our loyalty to Christ. We need to examine ourselves and say, what kind of testimony am I giving in this world that I should be free from trouble? Why aren't I being persecuted? Now, don't get me wrong. Christians can go through long periods of time when there is no real outward adversity. It's going to happen for Joseph as well. He's going to get out of prison. For those of you who don't know the story, he will get out. And he'll be elevated above Potiphar. He'll be second only to Pharaoh in the whole land of Egypt. And he will prosper. And he will prosper for years and years and years and years. Okay, so we're not saying that persecution is such a necessary part of our lives that we will never be exempt from it. The point that I'm trying to make, though, is this. We ought to expect it. And if we're not being persecuted, if there isn't trouble on account of our faith in Jesus Christ, we need to be constantly examining ourselves. Am I still faithful? Am I still faithful? Am I still faithful to Jesus? Do people know that this peace and harmony and freedom from trouble in my life is because the Lord is with me? And he is succeeding, allowing me to succeed in everything I put my hand to. That self-examination is absolutely necessary, lest we actually be free from trouble because of compromise, rather than because of this is the way the Lord is taking us at this time in our lives. So in conclusion, let us learn from Joseph's incredible confidence in God despite his circumstances. He was content in unimaginably difficult circumstances to trust in a God that, in comparison with us, he knew so little of. So let us be confident in a God who has given us abundant reason to trust in him. And so much proof of his faithfulness and power. And let us honor him and serve him and not be ashamed of him, because he is with us.